Are you tired of spending your time and money chasing strategy after strategy only to discover what worked 10, 5, or even 2 years ago is not working now? Things shift fast in the online space, and if you're not keeping up, you're getting left behind. It's time for something different. Welcome to the Marketing, Media, and Money Podcast, where every single episode will be jam-packed with proven, profitable strategies, behind-the-scenes secrets, and what's working now resources from industry experts and global influencers to help you scale your business, shorten your learning curve, and stand out in a crowded, noisy marketplace. And now, your host, award-winning marketing and media strategist and international speaker, Patty Farmer.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's episode of the Marketing, Media, and Money Podcast. I'm your host, Patty Farmer, and I'm looking forward to sharing today's industry expert with you. And I'm really excited today because today I'm bringing on a marketing expert, and we are going to be talking a little bit about some myths, what's going on, shiny object syndrome, why you haven't been able to book some of those discovery calls, and more importantly, why you haven't been able to close them. And we're going to go over a few strategies that you may want to make sure that you have a pen and paper so you can be writing them down. So let me tell you a little bit about our guest today. Haley Rowe is a marketing and sales coach, as well as the podcast host of the Health Coach Nation podcast and a LinkedIn lead generation service provider. She's been named as one of the top 25 coaches in Chicago and one of the top 6 business podcasts for health coaches. Since 2010, Haley has worked in the coaching industry and in business development marketing for startups. So I love that because we all know that startups, they have a lot of things they need to be working on, and then it just gets better and better. So we're going to talk about that. Haley, thank you so much for being here with me today.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here, Patty.
I love it. And I love that you are very specific about the niche that you want to work in. I think a lot of times in a lot of industries, we talk about this all the time, everybody thinks that they are the person for everybody. Oh, and yeah. While sometimes that is true, you can pretty much work with a lot of people. I prefer to work with industries that bring me joy,
absolutely,
make me happy. And I love that you have found that space for you. I think that is really a fabulous thing. Let's really dig in and let's get into it. The first thing I always like to say is I like to know what not to do just as much as I like knowing what to do. What would you say are a few myths that people have about marketing? Like I'll go first and throw something out there. I think a lot of times people get marketing funnels confused with sales funnels. Like they're not the same thing. That's a myth. For you, what are some of the myths specifically since you work with startups? I don't work with startups myself, but what are some of the myths that you hear over and over again?
Yeah, there's quite a few. Number one, I think a lot of people think the very first step is you need a very fancy website to get started. And I would say that you want to make sure you really know your audience and how they speak about their needs and what your offer or problem you solve is before you go all in on making this website and putting so much into it and writing all the copy. Because if you put out a website and then you find out actually nobody has this problem or nobody actually wants this and I haven't sold anything yet, it's not the best idea to have that all done and have to redo it. That's one major one. And I also think a lot of times people think they need to do ads or something as a first step. And I know you and I agree that it's all about building relationships first and booking clients from those relationships so that you know what works, you know what people respond to, and then you could go say, yeah, I want to put some ads behind this. And I think the last thing too is going back to your thing about niching. I think a lot of times people are afraid to do that because they think they're going to be pigeonholing themselves or they feel like nobody's going to come to them if they're too specific. But the truth is, if you are trying to be vague, it actually costs you so much more in client acquisition because you're not really sticking with anyone. You're not being memorable to anybody. When we are, it's like when you go on a dating app and you have type that you put in, or you filled out one of those personality forms and they match you to somebody who matches you, it's going to be such a much stronger connection and somebody you want to go on a date with than somebody who's a general, oh, here's just a male and you're female and here's your match. There's no pull there. I think it's really key to have a clear niche, have a clear problem you solve. Don't be afraid to go all in on it. And I would say those are some of the common mistakes I see.
I think I agree with you 100%. I know for myself, like I've been in the marketing and media space for over 20 years, but I know that in the beginning, one of the things that I figured out that I liked early on, I wasn't sure if I was ready to come out and say it like this sweeping statement, but I realized that I have 6 daughters and I come from a family of 4 girls. I love women. Mm-hmm. And I decided that I wanted to literally come out and say, you know what? I like to work with women. I market to women and the right men show up. It's not that I don't have male clients, but they're the right male clients. But I tend to work, at least 95% of my clients are with women. And I love that. And yeah. One time I said it and somebody got really upset and they said, really, Patty, you're going to pick clients based on their genitalia? Somebody said that to me. And wow. I was like, no. I'm just saying that this is what I prefer because I understand them. I get them. I love the drama, the hormone, the whole thing about women. Like I get it and I love it and it's super easy for me and comfortable and I like it. And so when I decided to do that, it just felt so good once I said it. And I have a lot of men that say, well, I serve women or I run a women-owned company or whatever the case may be. Great, then you are my kind of client. I think people want to know that. I think it establishes credibility and authority even in a way that people know that you've done it not just one off time where somebody might say, oh, have you ever worked with somebody that did this? And maybe you did one time. I think people want to know that. I really like those answers.
Yeah. And I think specializing allows you to have a more premium product. So if I just said health coaching or whatever service for everybody, it's a commodity and I'm going to compare it to everybody else. But if you're like health coaching for a specific type of person who want to do a specific type of goal, suddenly it becomes way more valuable because you're specializing in something that you've created a proven results time and time again for a specific type of person. And they're going to, wow, this guy gets me. So I think it helps you separate yourself from the pack. And we want to go to somebody who specializes and is the best in something compared to just a commodity.
I agree with you because let's face it. If you're in business and you're not an expert at what you do, get a job. That's the reality. But when I'm writing a check, I don't want an expert. I'm assuming that anybody who owns their businesses probably, and they've been in business for more than a year or two, that they are an expert. But that's not what I'm looking for where I am. I hire people who are going to take me to the next level. And so I want somebody who's an authority, not just an expert. Yeah. I'm looking at those and not just what they're saying, but what are they doing? And just what you said about the website, in the beginning, it may be fluid because you don't know. But once you do specialize, now I want to see it. I want to see it on your website. I want to see it through your social media posts. I want to hear it when you're speaking, right? All of that needs to come together for me. And then I feel really comfortable. So a lot of times people are doing, this is what I call it. I don't know what you call it. I call it spaghetti marketing, where they just throw stuff at the wall and hope it sticks. Yep. I call it lazy marketing, actually. If you don't know, and hey, there's a lot of things I don't know about other things that aren't what I do. I want to hire somebody that is an expert at that. People should. For you, if health and wellness is what you do, there are tens of thousands of people. But then when you specialize down, like now what you said, your people are raising their hand and saying, yes, you're exactly the person that I'm looking for you. And I'll pay you premium dollars for that because I know you've done it over and over again. And I'm probably going to get better results than somebody who maybe has done it once.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that makes a lot of sense. Another thing that you mentioned was about paid ads. I think that's really interesting because I do believe that a lot of people think that's the magic bullet. Oh yeah, let me just throw some money at it. And I actually think in life in general, that if you have a problem that could be solved by throwing money at it, it's probably not really a problem. And I think a lot of times people do that. They just think, oh, you know what? They don't really know who they serve. They don't really know how they want to serve them, but they're just like, oh, if I just take out an ad and I just pay some money magically, whether it's YouTube, LinkedIn, Facebook, whatever, they think, oh yeah, that's going to get me clients. And I don't believe that to be true. And obviously you don't believe that to be true. Although I think we would both agree there are times when it can jumpstart something if you have other things in place first. So it's not the end all be all. It's just one tool in a tool belt of strategy. Would you agree?
Totally. 100%.
One of the things I know that you're known for, and I really love it, is talking about this roadmap you have in talking about content. Let's kind of talk about that. I love something that I read about you that said that you believe that posting every day might actually be costing you sales. Now, that's a powerful statement, Haley. Very powerful. It's also a statement I love. So let's kind of talk about that. Why do you believe, and what's the strategy around that you came up with that? And why do you think posting every day might be costing you sales? And are you talking about social all across the board? Are you talking about specific ones? I know that you are a LinkedIn lead generation service provider, but are you specifically talking about LinkedIn? It's a powerful statement. Let's chat about it.
Great question. The reason why I bring that up is because I think a lot of times when you're a new business owner or business owner in general, you have a lot on your plate. And a lot of times it's easy to get sucked into things you think you need to be doing just because you need to be doing it compared to what's actually going to get you clients. So I think a lot of times people think that posting more is the key to getting more clients. If I just posted consistently, then suddenly all the people are going to come to me and they're going to want my services. And the truth is, you want to be taking it one step beyond content, which is actually engaging with your audience and understanding them and offering to help them. And a lot of times that happens on a one-on-one basis or in a webinar setting or on your email list. And my suggestion is, when you're going to be posting, don't just post just to post, which is what a lot of people do. And instead, be intentional with your posting and have calls to action to either engage with you, have a call to action to join your email list, have a call to action to book a call with you. But don't expect the post to be the thing that causes people to sign up all the time. You also have to be welcoming, for example, your new Facebook group members, where you're saying, thanks for joining the group. I noticed you joined. I realize you're a human being here. Don't obviously say that, but send a message or something and just welcome them and see if you get to know them a little better, ask them what they want to see in the group. And then you could customize the content towards what they need, or you can offer to help them with your freebie or whatever it is. So my whole thing about why you shouldn't be posting every single day if you have a limited amount of time is because your energy might be better spent actually engaging privately with these people or in a more intentional way, like in a webinar or something like that. Now, you can use content to funnel people to those things, but it's not the be-all, end-all.
Let's talk about repurposing. Because if you're not posting every day, does it mean you can't be taking your content that you have and chunking it, batching it? There's a lot of different ways to do that, which I believe is really the key, is knowing how to use everything you do more than one way. I'm a speaker and I take all my speeches and chunk them all down. And how can I be using them in content for social, for blogs, for an article? Mm-hmm. How else can I be using them? And I think that is a really good way to do it. But I also think, and this is where I really want to get your feedback, I love it when I actually have marketing people because it's just a different perspective. And I think my audience likes that. We all love different perspectives. But I know that for me, I also think about where are they in the customer journey. So one of the mistakes that I feel that I see often is that everybody's trying to talk to everybody, no matter where they are in the customer journey, at the same time in the same post. We do know that we need to talk to them all, but I don't believe in the same post. We need to be specific, like intentional, like what you said. Intentional is one of my favorite words. Who are you talking to in this post? I think, and I really want to hear your perspective and insights, is when you're repurposing content, you really get the ability to do that, because you may have this one piece of content that now you can chunk down and batch in different ways so that you can tweak it to who exactly you are speaking to, but it was the same content to begin with. So what's your perspective and your insights on that?
I totally agree. I'm a big fan of repurposing content. I think so often we spend so much time reinventing each post. And I think you got to realize people need to hear the same thing like 7 to 17 times before it really registers. And just because you posted something 2 days ago on Facebook doesn't mean everybody on all your other social media platforms saw it, or even your people on that platform saw it. Only on a business page, if you're not using ads on Facebook, I think it's 6% of people maybe will see your post. The key is to realize like nobody's really paying that much attention to you, unfortunately. Taking a piece of content, let's say you did a video and created a transcript for that video so that now you can pull some quotes from it to do quote graphic posts. And maybe you took a clip of the video to make it an Instagram reel, like a part that's really juicy and gives a great tip. Or maybe you told us, maybe you make another video of yourself just talking about that video, about enhancing it a little bit, or an add-on point you wanted to make. There's a lot of different ways you can repurpose. And I actually heard this really great tip from the TikTok coach. Her name's Stephanie Velasquenu, or I think I said her last name wrong. But if you look up the TikTok coach, you'll find her. And she said you could take one idea you had where you turn it into 8 pieces of content. And here's, do you want to know how to do it?
Absolutely. Well, I'm sure my audience does.
All right, great. You would have, let's say it was one idea would be 3 myths when it comes to, and then insert something in your industry or your business, let's say. One day you might share the 3 myths, just a quick overview of them. Another day you might break down each one as their its own day's post and go into a lot more detail about it. Another day you might talk about the why those 3 things matter. And that would be another 3 days of posts, like going into the why of it. And then another day you might go into the story about why those things don't work or why those are myths. So that would be 3 separate more posts. And you could space these out. You don't want to do this all back to back. But and then the last one would be, there was one other type of the story, the how, the why, and
I would say strategy.
Yes. I think that's what it was, actually. The point is, you can milk one thing for all it's worth. And I think we need to do more of that in our business, because so often, otherwise, we're always just off to the next shiny object and reinventing something without getting full capacity and use out of what we've already created.
I don't know if you know her, but on Instagram is Mel Robbins.
Yeah.
And she is the queen of the carousel. I mean, that whole swipe here, and she's able to take 3, 5, 7 points, and you'll swipe and she'll have each one on a separate one. And the last one is the one where she ties them all together with a nice pretty bow and says something. And when she does that, is once you swipe once or twice, like now you have to swipe all the way to the end because you want it to be all tied into the pretty little bow. And I think every time I see it, I think, what a great strategy. And she literally talks about all kinds of different stuff. So it's not even like she has this one niche. And if you care about, that's the thing. She actually applies it to a multitude of things, but you always recognize it. And so there's always like a flow and branding kind of thing, because she always highlights those in yellow. So you like, as soon as you see it, you know it's hers because she's branded them. And I think that is brilliant. And if somebody didn't want to do a lot of video, like I know there's a lot of people out there, I don't love doing video. There's a lot of way to do voiceover with still. There's a lot of way to do carousels and all kinds of different things. So you don't have to do that. I'm a firm believer in to think about whenever somebody has resistance, think of it like a muscle, like whatever exercise you don't want to do with that muscle, there's another exercise you can do to work that muscle. You just have to find the one. I know for me, people get surprised that I've been in marketing for as long as I have, but I made the decision that I don't like to blog. I just didn't like the consistency of having to do it with all the things I did in my business. 2 years ago, I said, this just doesn't make me happy. It's a stressor for me. So I'm going to stop blogging. I just decided I'm going to stop blogging. And so instead, I published a magazine. And now I only have to write it once a quarter and it works for me. Right, yeah. And so there's a lot of different ways that people could do different things. So I think it is really important that, yes, consistency and relevancy is key. But Matthew Hunt says that B plus content delivered with A plus consistency will outperform A plus content delivered B plus consistency. So when you're thinking about it, it goes back to that done, not perfect thing that we all can get hung up on. But the reality is, if you're speaking from your heart, people know you're speaking from your heart, and that's actually what they want. And that's how you're going to have that human connection. Do you feel like, I know that you say that you like work within this imposter syndrome. Mm-hmm. Do you feel a lot of times, because there's so much on social and people see all this, do you think that those are some of the things that get people in the imposter syndrome thing?
Yeah. I do work with a lot of people who come to me and say, I feel like I'm not enough. I feel like my content's not good enough. I feel like who would want to listen to me when there's all these other people, or they're comparing themselves to somebody else who's been in business for 25 years and they've only been in business for 5 years or something. And they're just totally unfairly comparing themselves to somebody else. And to that, I think it makes your whole business, doing the actual act of posting content or having a consult call or making an offer isn't hard. What makes it hard is your thoughts about all of that. Oh, should I do the post? Oh, is the graphic good enough? Oh my gosh, are people going to think this is weird? That's all the stuff that drains you. And it's like carrying a little heavy sled behind you while you're trying to get your work done. I think the key with that, going back to what you just said about B plus work, I love that concept. I think you do have to become okay with B plus work sometimes and knowing that done is better than perfect. And the only way you're going to get better, if that's really what you're concerned about, because usually if you have imposter syndrome, it's because you want to be better. You want to be the best. And if you really want to be the best, you have to be willing to fail and figure out what works and be vulnerable and put yourself in harm's way to find out how to be better the next time. You don't get to skip that part and you don't just get to magically turn into perfect one day. You have to be failing publicly. And the best time to fail publicly is when you're at the beginning of your business, when nobody's really paying that much attention to you.
It's so true. I remember when I first started blogging, before I realized that I didn't like it, but when I was first doing it, it was a stressor from the very beginning, but everybody said, oh, that's what you have to do. And my coach finally said to me one day, Hattie, you need to get over yourself, because guess what? Your first 50 blogs are going to suck anyway. The only way you're going to get better is to do it. And if you're doing it to get better and you're finding that you just really don't like it and every day is the last thing that you do, then don't do it. You don't have to do everything. When you hear people on social like talking about, oh no, you need to be on every single platform and you need to do every single strategy. That is just not true. If I had a dollar for every time somebody said to me, so Patty, do I need to be on every social media platform? What social media platform should I be on? And I always say, here's the simple answer. You should be on the social media platforms where your ideal clients hang out. That's where you should be. That's like the name of the game. You should be, where are your people? So of course, the first thing is always, who are my people? That's what you got to focus on in the beginning, is exactly who are your people. I really feel like that is really important. And then there's another thing that you said that I really liked when you were talking about the posting and how to structure those, that I think people don't realize. So let's talk about calls to action. So one of the things that I have found is, if in the customer journey, they're just beginning, just getting aware of that, trying to talk to them and trying to close this $5,000 sale just isn't even smart. They're not there.
Yeah.
They're just kind of becoming aware that they have that problem, right? Mm-hmm. But then maybe somebody who's aware and they're interested and they're literally at the stage where they're evaluating, you know, I think I'm going to do something about this. I need to solve this problem, but who should I hire to solve that problem? Okay, now maybe that is the time. But what I notice a lot lately, especially on LinkedIn, actually, I see a lot on LinkedIn where everybody wants to hammer every single thing. They'll post something and it'll be valuable. and it's got some really great stuff in it. And then after that, they just want to say, oh, let's do this or buy this or do that. And I think there's a time for that, for sure. It's always about inviting them to take the next step. I actually even believe in sales that you're doing somebody a disservice if they like your stuff and you don't give them an opportunity to take the next step, invite them for that. They can say no. But I also believe that there are certain calls to actions that work better with certain things.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say that a huge part of my audience offers discovery calls, breakthrough sessions, whatever you want to call them, strategy sessions, whatever somebody's verbiage is for that. Let's talk about discovery calls because I love that topic. It is probably the way that I get most of my clients, but I think that there's almost an art to knowing when is the right time, that this isn't, oh, let's connect and get on a call. I don't want to be having coffee with 100 people. You know what I mean? Right. There's an art to knowing when should that be the call to action versus here's my free downloadable XYZ. So let's talk about discovery calls.
Okay. Yeah. So when it comes to getting discovery calls, I think the key is you have to understand you're taking somebody's time when you have a discovery call. So you have to almost sell the call, which is free, I know, but you have to sell the call as very valuable and almost like a paid program. Because if you just say, hey, let's connect for a coffee chat, what's in it? For if I'm reading that as your audience, I'm going to ask, what's in that? What's in it for me? Like, why do I care? Why should I set aside time in my day to talk with you? So when you're doing posts, you want to be, I call this pre-offers. And what I mean by pre-offers is you want to have your audience raise their hand and indicate that they're interested in some way, shape, or form by asking a very directed question that can lead to a discovery call where you're going to share the answer, or it can lead to a discovery call in that you're going to go deeper on whatever the question was. In other words, a pre-offer could be something like, let's say you, Patty, work with service providers. So maybe one day your call to action would be something like, hey, I'm this week only. Now, I'm going to talk about the difference between a discovery call and an intro call in just a second, but I'm going to talk about why, if you're newer, can lead to why you need to have both going on. In other words, you might say, hey, this week only, I'm offering 10 free offer audits for service providers who want to increase the price of their offer without objections or something like that. Comment yes if you want, or I'll, first 10 people to comment will get one of these audits. So that audit would be something where you wouldn't be doing it as a full discovery call. It would be a short, maybe 15 to 20 minutes thing where you're in front of your person, which is really valuable use of your time, especially if you're new and you're starting out. You need to get in front of those people and give them some value. And now, Patty, maybe you had a pre-recorded thing you could send everybody to. And then on that, you sell a discovery call if you didn't want to do this one-on-one. But anyways, you would share some tips with them. And then you'd be like, to get this fully done or to get more support with this kind of stuff, is there anything you're looking for help with? Do you have any goals you're working on? And then you can actually see if they're interested in more of a deeper call. And maybe they're not, and that's fine. But you're going to deepen and fast, like more quickly accelerate that relationship so much more by doing that kind of post than if you were just to say, yeah, download my, go join my Facebook group, for example, in your call to action, which there's a time and place for other calls to action too. You don't want every single post to be like, hey, I'm doing a call again. But that would be one way to switch it up where you're not always just saying, hey, book your free strategy consult. And you're actually giving it a theme or giving a tangible thing they're going to get of why they should come to this call with you. And that could be really great. Now, the other way you could go about it, though, if you just wanted it to be a discovery call, is where in the post itself, you're talking about a piece of the whole cake of your program. And you're saying, this is just one part of my 5-step process to blah, blah, blah. If you're interested in learning my framework to do that and how it can apply to your business, grab your consult today. And then it's more direct and people know what they're signing up for. And those leads are going to be warmer, but you're going to get less of them than, for example, that free audit type of post. I think the key for everybody listening is to balance out, like, sometimes you're going to do those intro call type of things where you're giving some value and you're selling that really cool call with you opportunity. And then sometimes you're going to be doing, it is a discovery call, but you've already illustrated in your post why it's important and why they're going
to.
Yeah.
And who it's important for.
Exactly.
I agree with you. I think that a lot of times when I see posts that every single time they're saying the same thing, one of the things that I think is important for people to remember, so if you're listening, is that we live in a world where people know. We get it. We know. If they want to find you or they want to do something, they know how to go to your website. They know that you've got everything on your website, your socials on there, any whatever opt-in you're talking about on LinkedIn, guess what? It's probably on your website. And sometimes I think really the key is just to provide value, right? Yeah. Just to provide value. Not everything. For myself, I tend to only have every third to fifth thing that I do actually have a call to action. I try to just give value so that they know if I can't even tell you how many people have found me and said, oh, you know what? I saw you did this or that. And that's what made me reach out to you, which leads me to the next thing, but we're going to tie it back is, wouldn't you say or agree, I believe, that it's really hard to quantify likes and shares and all of that stuff on social. So you have to know that. I find that the people who usually hire me were not engaging on my posts at all.
Yeah.
Until after they hired me. Some people like to say stalk. They really just watch and be quiet. And I think part of that is because right now when people do engage, they're so worried that then you're going to hit them up and say, oh, wow, you talked about this on my post. And so let's get on a call. And really, they just thought what you said was interesting. I feel like people should pay a little bit more attention to that. I would much rather have somebody comment on my post and add more value, talk about an insight, a different perspective, so we can have a conversation, which will give more value rather than somebody to just get on my post to just say, bam, or hashtag truth or something like that, which I know that feeds the algorithm a little bit. But the reality is, what is it that you're trying to do? So then when you say and create urgency for what you were just sharing in those, which was creating urgency, saying, oh, I only have 10 or I only have this. And now this, oh, now you've created value for them that, oh, wow, you give this great information. And now you're going to get on the call with one of 10. Man, I want to be one of those 10 people. I think that what you're saying there, there's so much validity to that, because I believe that even the word discovery call now, people see that as a disguise for a sales call, right? They're like, oh yeah, you're telling me that you're going to help me with this, which really means is that you're going to get on a call and pitch, which for me, one of the ways that I like to stand in integrity is when I do offer those in the way that you just said, I always say that it's a pitch-free call. And then they feel really comfortable. One of the things that's really funny, I'm sure this has happened to you too, is that by the time you do have that call, they're like, okay, so what would it look like to work with you? I told you this was a pitch-free call. And then they're like, I know, Patty, but we're already on the call. I know we can make and stuff though. So stay in integrity with what you're saying. What do you think about that?
Yeah, it's a much smoother transition. When you've given results ahead of time or wins on a little call or in your posts and stuff, it is a much smoother, natural transition to talk about how you can continue together. You know what I mean? And one of my favorite principles is treat people like clients before they're clients sometimes. Like giving
value,
not holding back and doing what other people aren't willing to do, which is giving the tools, giving value and not being like, I need this to come back to me in this way. Well, I think you've nailed that. And I think also you don't want to have a bait and switch type of things. If it is, if you are currently taking applicants for your program and you're in a launch period, say that. Don't be like, oh, this call is just a free call for no purpose, if that's not really what you're, what phase you're in right now in your marketing. So I do think that's important. I do think that separating the two different types of calls is important. And I also want to point out that there are silent listeners and viewers and all that stuff. And the people who usually buy from you, it's so funny. They're usually not content consumers all day. They're like the kind of the people who actually pay for your program are busy people who are like, I want to solve this problem. And they're not sitting around on social media all day, liking and engaging and stuff like that, usually is what I've found. So don't be discouraged if you don't have a ton of likes, if you don't have a lot of engagement, and know that there are those silent viewers. And one thing I like to say too is the value you put out, it might not always come back to you the way you think it's going to come back to you, but it will come back to you in some way, shape, or form. So whatever you're putting out now, even though you feel like, oh, nobody's liking this or whatever, it's getting added to your, I guess, vaults or whatever, and it's going to accumulate.
Oh, I agree with you. As a matter of fact, the last client that hired me reached out to me on LinkedIn and said that she had heard me speak 3 years ago.
Yeah.
She said that she was watching my content, but she just didn't engage. She said she wasn't ready. And she'd heard me speak 3 years ago. And she said, Patty, when I can remember somebody's first name and last name and that I heard you speak 3 years ago, I knew we were going to work together. I just was waiting for the right time. You just never really know. I think that sometimes people think too short term, but I have to tell you, that was a golden nugget. So I'm going to repeat it for those that are listening. What Haley just said about that nugget about treating people like clients before they're clients, that is really a gold nugget. And I hope everybody wrote that down, because I think that is super, super important. And not everybody always gets that. They're running around, also busy and stuff, but people are watching. Just because they're not engaging doesn't mean they're not watching. And people should really think about that human connection, who it is, who is your audience, and make sure that you're showing up. I think that it is important. So you could have all this great value and all these great, amazing stop the scroll graphics and all this wonderful content. But then if your call to action leads to something ucky that makes them not feel good, you just did all that for nothing. I think that is really important. I know that we've touched on some really great things here: imposter syndrome, discovery calls, how to batch, what kind of content you should do. So that's a lot of things rather than focusing on one super thing. But I love the idea of having another marketing person, because I think the conversation is always so good when you have different things. Haley, how can people get a hold of you? I know that they're going to want to connect with you, and what's the best way to do that?
Yeah, thank you so much. So my website is HaleyRowe.com. And on there, on the topic of niching, however you say it, there's a free niche marketing training if you're looking to get clear on your elevator pitch. And I also have a free content roadmap for your audience that you're going to link to in the show notes that's going to take you through that process that we talked about, which is helping you structure your posts better, helping you streamline creating 30 days of content that will be compelling to your audience and more intentional rather than just busy work. I do want to recommend that to everybody listening.
That is awesome. And I love it when guests come on my show and they have a gift. That's really great. So thank you so much. I appreciate that. So we're getting to that point where we're getting ready to wrap up. What I would love to say, Haley, is what would you consider? You've already given us such great content. Like, thank you so much for being generous with your brilliance. It is really tough when you're asking a marketing person. What's your number one marketing, media, and money strategy?
Yeah. So the one I wanted to bring to the show is the 9-word email created by famous marketer Dean Jackson. And how it works is, if you have an email list, or even if you have a social media audience that's been dead or not really responsive, this is something that you can do to get them re-engaged. And when you're engaged with people, is conversations is where it all starts. The whole way you want to do this is you want to think about what is a question that could relate to the problem you solve or the offer that you have. But the way you're going to do this is non-pitchy and plain text. So it's not going to be like a newsletter format. You're not going to add photos. It's going to be very simple. Step one is to think about what your question's going to be. So for example, for someone like Patty, it might be, are you looking to take on new clients as a service provider? Or are you currently looking to launch your insert whatever it is they want to launch? And it would be something where they could give you a yes or no answer. And it should also be something that's not too embarrassing for them to answer. And it should be something that could lead into you either providing some kind of free resource to help them with whatever they said they wanted, or offer that free audit call, or see if it does make sense to have a deeper chat. So that's step one, is think of your question. Step two is to give it a good subject line. So you want to use something like question first name or hey first name, something not super detailed, just to generate some curiosity to open the email. And then in the email, you'd have that plain text of just, hey, name, and then insert your question. And that's it. And the reason why this works is because people don't have to read this long thing. It's simple. It's a yes or no. You get to know where your audience stands in the problem that you solve, and it can generate some conversations.
I think that really works. Sometimes people think the days of the long, robust newsletter and stuff. I mean, I think what happens is people look at that and say, oh, wow, this is so juicy and so good. I'm going to save it over here and I'm going to come back and read it. In which case they don't. Not because they're not interested. They're just busy. I think a 9-word, maybe it'll be 12, but like a very short yes, no question. You're asking me if I have that problem. And if I do, and you touched a nerve or you spoke directly to me, I'm going to be like, yes, I am having that problem. I'm going to hit the reply and say, yes, as a matter of fact, I am having that problem. And so it's something very easy that people can just respond to right now. I think it's a great way to re-engage maybe past clients that you haven't heard from, or maybe people that were in a group of some sort. Maybe you did a challenge or some type of thing, but you just want to re-engage. So I think that is a good first step to a nurture sequence where, you know, now you're doing some other thing, but it's a good way to open the lines of communication. So I have to tell you, Haley, that was a great tip. You gave some really great information. I love it. Some good insights and perspective. And I appreciate that so much. So thank you for being on the show with me.
Thank you. This was a blast. I love jamming with you.
Oh, I loved it too. And thank you to the audience. I know that this is multi-topic day where we talked about a lot of different things. Make sure you connect to Haley. Make sure that you grab that gift, because that's a great gift. And I like to talk about taking action. You might want to be thinking about that 9-word email. Might be a great thing too. So thank you so much for that. And while I'm thinking, I have to take a moment to thank our sponsor. The Marketing Media Money Podcast is sponsored by Meg Schmidt, founder of Take the Leap Franchise Consulting Company. The franchise industry is booming as people look to diversify their income streams with essential businesses without having to quit their day job. To learn more, schedule a call, go to www.megschmidt.com. Conversation is free, but the insights are priceless. Thank you again for joining us. We will speak to you again next week. And until then, have a phenomenal day.
Thank you for joining us today on the Marketing, Media, and Money Podcast. To shorten your learning curve even more, make sure to grab your free copy of the Marketing, Media, and Money magazine at www.marketingmediamoney.com. I promise your business will thank you.